Buried is produced and distributed by KETR.org and is presented uninterrupted thanks to the support of its fans and listeners. Become a supporter today when you visit KETR.org and click donate.
I'm George Hale, the host of Buried, and here with me in the studio is Buried's executive producer, Jared Knight, who's also my boss. We have some news. Buried is returning in 2 weeks on a regular schedule.
It's kind of exciting.
It's nerve-wracking, too.
It's not an easy story to tell. Nothing about this story has been easy, but we thought we would take a minute to kind of rewind and talk about how we got to where we are, which is really three episodes in, but those episodes contained so much information that was sort of borne out from hours and hours of audio and conversations and so forth and so on that have been sort of collected over what's now a year, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we thought it'd be kind of neat to go back to the beginning and talk about where the project started, right?
Yep. That's the question we get the most, and I figure that's the question we can answer first.
Well, you've already answered the first question.
What's that?
When's Buried coming back?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
Here we are. Next question.
Yeah. We always wanted this project to happen in real time. And when it started in the fall of 2017, we weren't sure how much interest it would generate. One thing I was hoping was to hear from people along the way about what they might know about the case. And that's sort of been a mixed bag so far. But listeners have given us a few leads that we are still pursuing. The story from the inside, though, is that it started with an email. I didn't even work here when that email arrived, so I'm going to let Jared talk to you about it.
Yeah, apparently I wrote this thing, and I kind of don't remember because we do a lot of things here. We're not just for those who are following along at home. We actually were operating out of a radio station, a 100,000-watt news and information station here in Northeast Texas, 88.9 KETR, and so we actually are busy, you know, producing 44 different radio programs to fill up 168 hours a week every single week here on the radio.
Right.
But we have a news op. We're the probably the most powerful and farthest reaching news operation in Northeast Texas, and so and also we cover local news. So a lot of people know about that, and oftentimes people who have things that they think the news ought to cover will kind of contact us. Anyway, I remember one day I took a phone call. Our news director, Mark Haslett, was in my office with me whenever I took this call. But a woman from
Quinlan,
originally from Quinlan.
Yeah, well, I don't think she was born there, but she lived there.
Lived there for a time. And she called, actually, in reference to another project, air project, that we were doing. We were just kind of highlighting nearby towns, and Quinlan was one of those towns. And she called and said, well, you've spoken to someone, you've been speaking to someone who may actually know something more about the death of my dad. Her dad was a cop, Bill Smelly, a law enforcement officer there in Quinlan, who had been shot and killed inside the Quinlan police station on the 17th of September in 1983. And so she relayed this story that she was six at the time and that she believed that there was something shady about the deal. She relayed kind of a powerful story. And it certainly sparked and piqued our interest, but at the time, the station wasn't staffed in such a way as to be able to follow up on sort of the myriad tips that she gave with regard to her father's story. But at the same time, she also said, well, there are other sort of untold or undertold stories coming out of Quinlan. In fact, there's this one story about a woman named Carrie, who had three young children and went missing back in 92 is what she said. We've since discovered that it was a little earlier, but she referenced a missing persons report that ended up accidentally being filed as a welfare check, which has sort of borne out. She mentioned a place where she was potentially buried, which is something that we have since addressed in the podcast or whatever. There was just all these tips. We didn't know what to do with the information at the time. We didn't really have the resource to be able to start investigating. So we put it in something of a future file and said that if we ever do come up with the resource to be able to kind of follow through with any of this, that we will. And at the time, Mark Haslett, the news director at the station, was running a search for some help in the news department, and lo and behold, appears George Hale at some point in the shortly after that on the timeline. And George, you mind if I say that you came in as a reporter, field reporter, knocking out stories here, and then at some point Mark said, hey, here's this thing that sort of came in within the last 6 months. Hold it till January because you've got things to do, but if you get a chance, start looking into it. And then all of a sudden, you start looking into it.
I have my reply to that email right here. It's the, it was, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 paragraph email that you sent to Mark back then.
Yeah. And well, I was trying to encapsulate everything that had been in the phone call that we'd heard so that it would be part of the record.
Right. And anyway, my reply one day later on November 26, 2016 is just two sentences. Holy crap, I'm eager to get started. I don't think I really knew what I was getting into then.
No. Well, you couldn't possibly have known, you know, because I don't mind saying, and you probably have a version of the story, that we had started thinking, well, maybe this will be sort of a super spot, like a 2 or 3 minute story. You know, once we kind of get some facts nailed down, this will be one of our local longer form stories, which fits into about 2 or 3 minutes on the radio. And then we said, I don't know, this could be a long form. You know, this could take up like what we call internally a D segment or something, which runs about 4 or 5 minutes during Morning Edition or All Things Considered, like a longer segment. And then you started looking in, you were like, I think we need more time. And then we need a bigger boat.
Bigger show.
Yeah, yeah. And so we started looking at, you know, do we want to do a series? Do we want to do, you know, monthly check-ins or whatever? And at the same time, sort of behind the scenes at the radio station, we were talking about sort of spooling up on making a podcast, doing a podcast, because we had not really put forth a serious effort with regard to podcasts. We had a couple podcasts that sort of automatically happened, but we had not sort of strategically gone after creating a podcast. And so we thought, hey, let's flex our muscle there and also give the story sort of the space that it needs to be told. And here's what we determined. Even with a podcast, there's still so much more story.
Right.
There's still so much more to this story.
Yeah. And I'm going to
please,
that when we decided to come up with the concept for how to put the story out there, we, you know, made the unusual decision to put out a story that didn't have an ending yet. And that's really because we wanted the project to happen in real time. We were hoping to hear from people along the way who might listen to one of the episodes and get in touch with us with what they might know about the case. It was probably a little optimistic because it's been a mixed bag so far on the information coming in. But what has not been mixed is the enthusiasm and support both for the podcast and for Carrie Mae Parker's family. I know they're grateful and slightly overwhelmed by the amount of attention that the case is getting lately. So I know they're grateful. I know we're grateful too for everyone's support. And one of the things that Jared and I both wanted to do when we start the podcast up in 2 weeks again is to have a way for you to communicate with us and for us to be more just transparent and open about the whole thing and how this all works. Or that's why we're going to create these new episodes where we talk to people who have been involved in the podcast and who are working on it, or also who are listening to it and want to know anything specific about the case, want to ask us questions and that sort of thing. And at the end of this, I'll throw in some information about how you can get in touch with us and how you can send questions our way. And yeah, we want to hear from you. We want to hear what you think we can be doing. If you have any ideas, if you have any certainly knowledge about the case, we want to hear from you yesterday, because we're still working on it. It's still going on. And we've been working on it for almost a year now. And we're not stopping anytime soon.
No, and there have been so many people, too, that have reached out, some in relation to this case and some with information about other cases. And that was something that I think it would be worth, I don't know if it's even possible to clarify here, but another question that we sometimes get is the Carrie Mae Parker disappearance case the only case that Buried is going to work on? And the fact is that we don't really know the answer to that. I mean, we would like to put as much information as we can into, you know, the show about the Parker case as best we can. I mean, at some point there may be no new information, but it turns out that we haven't gotten anywhere close to the bottom of that barrel yet.
No.
That does not mean that we don't recognize that there are other stories worth telling, or that the production house that is creating the show, that's funding the show, might not also be able to build something else to be looking at some other things. I can tell you that there are limited resources that the show benefits greatly from its audience, but particularly from those who would support it financially, because there are other stories that need to be told. And we're not, too, this was something, George, that you and I were talking about yesterday, that we're not really approaching this the way that a lot of podcast producers are approaching their podcast. And I don't just mean the fact that we're not inundating folks with, you know, support messages and commercials and things like that, but also we try to make it very painfully clear whenever what you're hearing on the show is speculation. I think what I had said before was that we are applying journalistic ethics and integrity to the content that we're creating and sharing.
Yeah.
And not just speculating or saying, here's somebody's opinion about something that might have happened. Here's somebody's foggy memory about it. I mean, the things that are being reported are things that we are able to prove, or are you know, somebody's actual words, you know, saying so-and-so said this, unless we know that they said it.
Right.
I'm particularly proud of that, for what it's worth.
Yeah, me too. I wouldn't really want it any other way. But
however,
it does make it a lot harder and a lot more time-consuming and a lot more stressful. Or more stressful? A lot, yeah.
There are certainly easier ways to go about creating a podcast that guesses at what might have happened to a person that went missing than actually finding all of the facts associated with the case. But it's hard.
It is hard. But, you know, I think that that one of the real takeaways from working on a case like this, though, that has never been looked into, means that there are people who are ready to tell their story to us for the first time. So it takes time, and it takes work, and it's a lot more complicated than it would be if it were a different subject. But the flip side of that is that, you know, it's a huge opportunity to make a difference in a really positive way if we just, you know, if we do it right.
Also, I always find it's important whenever somebody asks about the production and so forth, and they say, you know, have you found her yet? We would love to know,
right? Yeah.
What happened, where she went. But without a doubt, if the case comes to a close before the story that we're telling comes to a close, we will interrupt the story to tell you. You know what I mean? Like, this is definitely a case that is in the process of being solved, and not necessarily by us. We are just putting together information.
Right. Yeah.
There's an update in the case, we're going to bring that to you.
Yeah. I always tell people when they ask me what happened, you know, is that if I knew what happened to Carrie Parker, I would have already told the police and the family, and of course, you know, you,
right,
and everyone and anyone listening. We have some good ideas and some great. There's evidence of some a few really important theories that's going to take a little bit of time to explain, but we don't know, though. I mean, there's no one knows. It's still a mystery. So I hope that if you're listening to this with the intention of having it all wrapped up, you know, with the
a nice bow,
yeah. There's probably other podcasts out there for you.
If you want somebody to take a long time to tell you a story that has either a happy or a sad ending. Yeah, you have to look somewhere else. We definitely are spending our time trying to find information that, as far as we know, nobody else has really been seeking out. There are a lot of people who have been trying to tell the story. We know that family members have wanted the story to get out there, but for much the same reason that we're hoping to create this interactive space within the show is so that maybe somebody out there knows something and they're willing to share the information, you know, in order to kind of put this thing not behind us necessarily, but behind those folks who have been affected the most. Because it's nothing about this story, we keep talking about it, nothing about this story is really pleasant.
Right. And it only gets, that's another part of this that I don't know if, you know, people have a good grasp on, I guess, if they've only heard the basics. But, you know, this is only going to get darker. It's a lot messier than it even seems now. I mean, I said in the first 5 minutes of the first episode that it's the the craziest story I've ever heard in my life, and that's still true. And it's also one of the saddest and one of the darkest stories I've ever heard too. And you know, it requires a lot of sensitivity and just a careful approach too, I think.
And obviously patience.
Yeah.
We get every time we feel like we're getting close to something, that there's a theory cooking, and that actually leads me to another thought that I think is worth mentioning. That I don't know that it'll placate folks who are really interested in all of the latest George that you've learned and that we could potentially share, but it certainly makes sense to me as sort of the hands-on guy who makes it go out into the world, that this story is being reported in real time. The story is being investigated in real time. So when there's a lull, it's almost always because the thing that we were about to say needs to be updated or needs to be changed. You know, this, right. If we wait until the story's over to tell it, I mean, I don't know that the story will ever have an ending, but the point is there's always something that needs to be modified before it hits the podcast. In fact, there are some things we've talked about that we could potentially go back and modify in some of the things that have already been published. But the fact is that we, not necessarily because it's not true, but because there may be more or better or deeper information. But the fact is that we will have time. We'll take the time to put the information out there that we think is the most relevant. We're not taking any liberties here other than the standard editorial liberty that anybody would take about what to present and what not to present.
Right.
But certainly we're not making any judgment calls with regard to, you know, well, that's too dark to say it like that. You'll notice that sometimes the language is a little dicey on the show because there are very real emotions, very real people. And but you've met the people, you've talked to the people, you've gone out into these places. You could talk about, if you wanted, you could talk about traipsing through the woods, watching where you step, you know.
Yeah. We'll hear about that in the coming episodes after this next segment, but there's definitely some plenty of traipsing through the woods that happens in this podcast.
George has been late nights in dark you know, lake areas with a photographer trying to capture photographs. He's attempted to create sort of the mood so that from a creative standpoint we have music to match. That's another thing that one day we'd like to talk about, you know, sort of the sound of the show. We can talk about how George will become, the audio that George collects from the field becomes progressively better as the show goes on, as he learns more about how that works. But long story short is it doesn't change the content, doesn't change the story that's being told. And I don't know, I'm very proud of what we've got so far, but I've personally never been a part of anything like this. I've only read about it. I listen to podcasts, other podcasts, but none like this. And it turns out that there are a lot of people who are really into true crime podcasts.
Yeah.
Things that actually happened.
Yeah, for sure. I mean,
we're hearing from them. We get messages from them the world over.
Yeah, I just was emailing back and forth with someone who was listening in Morocco the other day. Yeah, there's a real interest in this sort of thing. I think that there's a surprising amount of people who identify with the Parker family and their dissatisfaction or their disappointment in the way
frustration
in their frustration with the way that tragic cases in their families have been treated. And that's one of the things that's really surprised me and frankly made me feel pretty depressed. I mean, just to read, you know, messages from people whose siblings committed suicide or were murdered or unsolved murders, unsolved disappearances, it's not light reading. it's really kind of shocked me because you don't hear about all the things that have gone on a long time ago, because I guess that we've all just moved on. I mean, there are many people missing from Hunt County, families who have just zero answers about their loved ones in Quinlan and elsewhere, who are just desperate for any information and aren't getting any from any, you know, really any help from anyone, or at least that's their perception. And I think from the limited amount of information we have about some of their cases, that it's not in their imaginations, put it that way.
Right. Well, it's a very kind way to say that there are law enforcement officials who have information and who could potentially, it should also be stated, and this is such an important point, nothing about what we're doing is secret.
Yeah.
We would love to share any information that George has learned with anyone who is capable of helping put an end to this, you know, sort of
absolutely
nightmare that has existed for the family and those closest to the Parker family.
Right.
There's nothing about what we're doing is secret.
No.
Or in fact, we've offered up working with law enforcement, saying we know things, and we know things from people that we know you haven't talked to yet.
Right.
We would love to tell you what we know. But for whatever reason, they're interested specifically in how a piece of information came to be in your possession. And
yeah.
Even the other day, the head of the law enforcement agency in question said openly that he's simply not going to talk to you, George.
Yeah.
Because he believes that you have information that he doesn't believe you ought to have.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know that we've been asked by other media other than one radio station in Commerce, Key
88.9.
Yeah, 88.9. Yes. It's on a case, and they received some information from us, and I'm still trying to figure out how they did that. I don't believe they needed to have, and I'm just not going to speak to them about that case. That is a case that we got after it was 20 years old, and we have investigated it, still investigating it. But that's just something I'm not going to talk about right now.
So let me ask you straight up. Have you ever stolen any information from the Hunt County Sheriff's Office?
No, certainly not.
Have you ever walked in and walked out with something that, you know, just you grabbed some files and ran off?
No.
How about this? Have you ever seen any information related to the Hunt County Sheriff's Office that you don't know the Hunt County Sheriff's Office actually released?
No. I mean, the sheriff is right. I mean, if you want to just skip to that part, we have information that the sheriff's office doesn't want us to have. That's true. I don't think we've ever denied that. I admitted that in an interrogation room at the Hunt County Sheriff's Office last summer. That'll come out later. But the accusation, if that's the accusation, that we have information that they don't want us to have and they don't know how we got it, that's true. I'm only speculating, but I think the reason that they don't want us to have it is because it paints a very embarrassing picture of the way that they've handled this case in particular. That's my best guess. And the reason that that information isn't just out there, the reason you can't just Google it and find those papers, is because we are the opposite of what they actually say we are, which we're responsible, ethical journalists who are not going to compromise their case, and we're not going to put false information out there without vetting it. And of course, months before the podcast, you know, was ever launched, I approached both the sheriff and the detective on the case and told them, you know, that I would be happy to share any information we had, and that if they had concerns about any parts of the information that we have from their files, we are reasonable people. We will listen to any argument for withholding information, and we'll evaluate it with good faith. Because, of course, the last thing we want would be to compromise their investigation. But I'll also say what I told him that day, too, you know, when I met him last summer, is that I don't know if I speak for everyone, but I think that in general, we believe that the lack of information that's out there about Carrie's disappearance is the primary reason that it hasn't been solved. It's because the vast majority of people who are aware of that disappearance believe things that are just completely untrue. And part of that is because of the false information that has been put out there by law enforcement. Is that putting it well?
Yeah. There's a void. There's an information void, and people will fill that void with legend, with, you know, inaccurate, misremembering. I mean, there's a lot of things that can happen whenever there's no information, and people speculate. There's a lot of speculation.
Yeah.
Most of the things that we've learned have been, I mean, and the things that we, the trails the rabbit trails that we go down are in an attempt to either confirm or otherwise disprove the speculation that we've heard. I mean, that's literally been where the whole thing started.
Right.
Was somebody speculated, this is what happened, and then we said, crazy if true. Is what you oftentimes see on the internet comment section.
Yeah.
Nuts if true. Yeah. Yeah. So George was looking into it.
Right.
And it's unfortunate that it appears on its face that the reason that law enforcement does not want to work with you, George, is because you may know as much as they do about the interviews that they've conducted
right.
so far. Yeah. That may, and I say that to say, I believe we've determined from kind of going over those that there are some inaccuracies there that could be cleared up.
Right.
That you have the capacity to set their record straight.
Right, right.
If they would just engage
right.
about it. Because it's not, we're not trying to, it's not a gotcha thing. We're not trying to burn anybody here.
My offer to help to fix the mistakes in their papers was made. I mean, in fact, if you're hearing me say this on this podcast right now, it's for the first time because I've never even mentioned it. It was private. You know, I offered privately to help clarify a few things that are, it's not my opinion. I mean, it's just, they're just, you know,
factually error.
Yeah, yeah. Just you know, some of them are innocent mistakes too. They're, you know, typos and things that I can see myself making the mistake if, you know, I didn't have the luxury of being only on this story. You know, that is one benefit of the doubt you have to give them, is that they have many cases, and, you know, this is a very confusing case. And so when you don't have, you know, when it doesn't have your full attention, you're going to make mistakes, and I don't blame them for that. But, it, you know, it took me 10 times to get any of this straight, and I still haven't gotten it straight in my head completely. Yeah, it's been really disappointing and sort of almost disturbing, really, response from their side, that the issue of where these files that we got came from has sort of trumped any other subject, including, you know, what information we have learned from dozens of interviews that they don't have, or the mistakes that they have made, you know, in those same files. And yeah, there's something really disturbing to me about that you know, the question of a source would supersede, you know, the case. I mean, simply as that, right?
We don't know. We don't know how decisions are made. We don't know how priorities are set. We don't know how it's determined what's worth doing and what's not worth doing. But we do know that figures who we might presume would be key figures in the case have expired.
Right.
People have died of old age in the years since Brandy filed the missing persons report in 2010. People who would have been central to the story, who could have given firsthand information about the people involved, about Carrie, about her state of mind, about her, you know, there's just so much, a wealth of information
right.
that is simply gone from the earth because, for whatever reason, these folks weren't questioned. And we hate that too, because we would love to be able to talk to them.
Sure, are you kidding me?
It would make some fantastic podcast and really tell a fuller picture of what happened. But we didn't come into this information in 2010 when some of the parties that
right.
to whom we're referring were still alive.
Yeah, and you know, I think that is really the point. What Jared is saying really underlines the big picture here about why we're not going to stop what we're doing, even though the law enforcement in the case would really like us to, you know. And it's kind of a weird position to be in. It is for me. I've never been asked anything by a detective and refused to tell them the answer. That's kind of a crazy experience, you know. But I, you know, in the same meeting, I had to tell him no twice. One is I had to say, he asked me the source of this information, and yeah, no, we won't tell you. And then also, secondly, that he wants us to, or they, the sheriff's office, the sheriff, I think, has said it pretty clearly the other day in an interview with a Facebook page called the Hunt County Theft Reports, that because we have information they don't want us to have, you know, he's not going to talk to us. And I think it also just underscores the importance of, you know, that second answer in the interview last summer, which, you know, was also no about, will you stop what you're doing? Because, like I said, we believe that the lack of information out there about the case is the thing that is preventing it from being solved. They have an opposite view. They think too much information getting out there will compromise their case. And, you know,
the case, which is now 8 years old officially and some 20...
Do the math. 27, I guess, now?
Yeah, 27 years old.
Yeah, so it's a difference of opinion. They're obviously cops and we're not. It's very possible they know more than we do, obviously, but, you know...
Particularly about this case.
Right, and so if, you know, we're all ears. We are absolutely all ears. They have my number, they have my email, and...
there's a chair right there for him. If they
and there's a chair and a microphone ready, you know, anytime that any one of them is willing to talk to what the people who, or, you know, to talk to the public about a case that matters to them, I think. And I think that, I think it's obvious that, that people care about this because of the response to the podcast. It's a shame that that same interest and same enthusiasm for finding out the truth could not be channeled, you know, through the sheriff's office just due to lack of either
what,
interest.
What feels like a failed bargain is what it feels like. It seems to me, as an outsider looking in, it seems to me like that they're wanting to bargain. They're saying, we'll talk to you, but you're going to have to tell us how you got hold of information that really you didn't. Somebody else didn't gave it to you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
It wasn't even it's not like that you or the organization for which you work had anything in the world to do with this information leaving the sheriff's office.
Right.
Someone willingly let this information leave.
Right, right. Yeah.
And
as far as we know, I mean, right, I don't know. That's the other thing, is I don't know exactly what happened, but I do know that the person who received the information, not me, but the person who received it before me, was authorized to receive it, and the person who gave it to me was certainly authorized to give it to me. So how those decisions were made by other people is neither here nor there.
Yeah, yeah. There seems to be like a logical leap. I mean, if at minimum we know at least that information, why not engage and say, maybe you've got something that we don't have?
Right. And we want to hear from you. So we're answering questions that listeners are sharing with us on Twitter and Facebook. Send us a chat message or a direct message if you want. You can email us the old-fashioned way at buried@ketr.org. That goes to me and Jared. You can send us questions. We'll answer them on these special episodes, which are not going to happen too frequently, but I think we can expect them, or we think we can expect to have a few more times throughout the podcast, a chance to just sort of pause and think about where we are and just hear from you and talk to you, basically. That hasn't really happened much so far, and I think that it'll be great to be more connected. I'm also creating a group on Facebook for discussion that we'll probably pull some questions from for these future episodes. You can look for that at facebook.com/buriedradio. But that said, if you want to hear about new episodes the moment they're ready, make sure you are subscribed to this podcast. That's how you learn about new episodes. Do you know how to do that? Go to the App Store on your phone. Look for one called NPR One. It's NPRONE. Then just search the word buried. You'll see the logo with the skull on the front. And once you've subscribed, you can choose to receive notifications about new episodes. Switch that on. You'll actually be the first to know next time before anything comes out. If you have an iPhone, you can subscribe directly to Buried in the Podcast app. On Android, there's an app called Google Play Music. That's the one I use. It's free. Stitcher and Player FM are also good.
We're in Pocket Casts and Podbean as well. There's a couple other places where if you've got handlers that you like, use them. Buried's there.
Yep. You can also follow our website closely at ketr.org/buried. While you're there, take a moment to admire the brilliant photography by Brittany Greider. She perfectly captured some of the places we're visiting. Her photos are also on Instagram at buried.radio. We'll be updating those with more pictures of Carrie that her family has graciously given us permission to share, which falls in the same category as everything, because they've let us have access to pretty much every single thing.
Including their memories.
Right, no matter how uncomfortable. Also, lots of documents that we've mentioned in the podcast are on all those places I just mentioned. We do try to show our work here, and we've been continuously uploading files and emails and all sorts of stuff. So.
Supplemental information to the podcast.
Yeah.
It's all there. Like I said, we're an open book. I don't want to say that we don't get anything out of it. We get something out of it in the same way that any other journalistic pursuit gets something out of being journalists. Is, you know, it's the story needs to be told.
Yeah.
And so that's what that is. However, if you think it's worthwhile and you feel like supporting so that we can afford to do this as often as we like, as much as we like, if you find value in it, consider making a contribution. You can go to ketr.org, which is where the email was, at ketr, buried at KETR.org. But if you go to KETR.org and click the donate button up there, you can also leave a note that says, hey, this is in support of Buried, and this way we know. Plus, there's some cool gifts there if you want to get a thank you gift, something sort of to exchange. But we have heard from, I think it's important to note, we've heard from other podcasts that are similar to this, and they say that in terms of something to offer in the podcast marketplace, something that you, the listener, would appreciate, that we're on the right track, because it should be noted that this is your first podcast and my first podcast. We've never done anything like this.
Very much so.
So, but we're figuring it out as we go, and the fact is that we feel very confident in what we're doing, because not only have we had such a positive response from listeners, we had so many subscribers. Thank you so much if you're subscribed. If you're not, easy to do. And that kind of helps us to know where the story is resonating and where the interest lies. And it also kind of helps break down some walls in the end. We can say we can point to the interest that this story has when we're trying to make a case about how what needs to be done next.
Yeah.
So there's so many positives to subscribing. Plus, you'll always know whenever there's something new. And sure, it's been a while, but things are back on track. And we are looking forward to releasing episodes now and into the future.
Yep.
So exciting.
Well, thanks, Jared. Do I thank you now since you're my guest on the show, or are we both?
It's a lot of fun. I hope to be a part of the next chat.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Okay. I think Jared, by the way, has experience in hosting radio programs, so I feel like the more of that, the better on this on this show.
People don't want to know what I have to say. They're here for the story that you're in. And yeah. I am too, actually. I'm here for that. I mean, every week there's something. Almost this week, it's been every day there's been something new. So my head's been in it now for months and months and months. And I too cannot wait until there is something that could be considered a major break in the case.
Yeah.
Because and we are so grateful, as you mentioned, to all the folks who are actually helping behind the scenes. It's not just you and I.
Yeah. And actually, you know, that's something that I know we need to go, but you know, when we talk about the sheriff's office and their approach to this case, I hope that people don't think we're making a blanket statement about police in general, not because I think it's important to prove that we're pro police or whatever, but also just because it's in this case, it's true. There are many police officers who care about Kerry Parker, care about this case, and want it solved, and are helping us do it. So,
yeah, it's not true to say that no law enforcement has worked with George.
Right.
That's not true.
Yeah. You'll be hearing from many of them in the coming episodes. So, and that's one of the things that's given me a lot of confidence in what we're doing, is that the other people in law enforcement, you know, believe in what we're doing and want to help. So just thought I should throw that in there.
Buried continues to be a production of KETR and Commerce,
mm-hmm.
online at KETR.org. I'm Jared Knight, executive producer, and that's George Hale.
Yep. Thanks for listening, and look forward to hearing from you soon.
This show, and others like it from KETR.org, is only made possible by the generosity of listeners just like you. You can help make this show and others from KETR possible by donating now at KETR.org.